Hello there, my name's Gary Sims, and this is Gary Explains. Now, Qualcomm recently announced a new low-end chip designed for laptops. That's the Snapdragon 7C Generation 2, slightly faster, slightly tweaked version of the existing 7C. But at the same time, they also hinted there's going to be a Qualcomm developer box so that you can actually get access to Windows 10 without having to spend thousands of dollars on some kind of high-end laptop. Now, that's all they said at the time. It was just going to be this developer box, but slowly details have been coming out. Although we haven't yet got the official announcement, we do have some clues about what this box is going to be. And basically, let me tell you this, it comes down to the price. It's all going to be about the price. So if you want to find out more, please let me explain. Now, I've made several videos in the past about the need for ARM-powered boxes, whether that's running Windows, whether that's running Linux, that have some decent features, not necessarily bleeding edge features, just decent features, so they're accessible, so that people can get hold of them without having to spend a lot of money, and the kind of the ecosystem can grow. Two videos in particular I'd like to shout out. One is where I say, is Microsoft and Qualcomm listening to what we need? This is the one thing that we need, and that's a dev box. And that's what Qualcomm and Microsoft have announced. And I've got another video quoting Linus Torvald, of course, the inventor of Linux, saying that what we really need is ARM PCs, because the Intel PCs and AMD PCs are just so available everywhere. Just for a few hundred pounds, you can pick up, you know, a pretty decent nowadays PC, and you can start running things on it. You know, and you can run all your software in Windows and do whatever you develop. And it's not hard. You literally can walk into any electronics store and just put it under your arm and walk out with it. Of course, you need to pay for it on the way. Okay, and it's really easy, but you can't do that with an ARM box. Where do you get a PC or some kind of computer based on the ARM chip? Now, of course, we've got the Raspberry Pi, but that's lacking, particularly in terms of performance and some of the features. So Qualcomm have now announced this box, which we think is going to be called the QC710. And because it was announced at the same time as the Snapdragon 7C Generation 2, at the time we thought, well, it's obviously got that chip in it, and it looks like it does. But here are three reasons why this thing needs to be dirt cheap. I'm not just saying it needs to be reasonably priced. I'm not even saying it needs to be like at the low end. It needs to be dirt cheap, absolutely the bottom possible price for it. Here are three reasons why. So let's have a look at them. The first reason is the specs, starting with that processor, the 7C Generation 2, and then going on to all the other stuff. Let's have a look at the specs, comparing it, to example, to a Raspberry Pi 4. Why? Because we know that a Raspberry Pi 4 with 4 GB of RAM only costs $55. So let's do some comparisons and see where we're at with this development box. So the first thing to note is that the QC710 is going to have the Snapdragon 7C. So that's a SoC designed specifically for boxes like this, for laptops, Chromebooks, and so on. And of course, that has got two Cortex A76 cores, clocked at 2.5 gigahertz, and six Cortex A55 cores. Now, the Raspberry Pi 4 uses the Broadcom BCM2711, and that's got four Cortex A72 cores, clocked at 1.5 gigahertz. Now, we know the Raspberry Pi 4 can run Windows. In fact, I've got several videos here on this channel looking at how you get that going, but it can be a bit of a painful experience, partly to do with the storage speed, partly to do with the the processor speed. Now, there is a big difference between the Broadcom chip and the Snapdragon chip. We've got an octa-core, first of all, in the Snapdragon, only a quad-core in the Broadcom chip. You've got two Cortex A76 cores, so they're several generations ahead of the Cortex A72 cores. And then, of course, you've got that backed up by the Cortex A55 cores. And then the big cores are running at 2.55 gigahertz compared to 1.5 gigahertz. So big difference in terms of core configuration, core generation, and speed. So I would expect that the Snapdragon development box for Windows on Snapdragon will be significantly faster than Raspberry Pi 4. So that's a good winning point for the Snapdragon. And maybe we can say the same also for the GPU. The Adreno 618 is no slouch. It's not the best. It's not an Adreno 660 or something like that. However, it is very well used in the Android market. The drivers are there. The games are there. The optimizations are there. The support is there from all the different toolkits you need, you know, Unity and so on. It's all there. The video core chip that's inside of the Raspberry Pi 4 does a good job for what it does. It gives you that graphics, gives you video decoding, gives you what you need to drive 4K displays. However, it's nowhere near, of course, as well supported as the Adreno. So a win there for the Qualcomm chip with the Adreno 618. When it comes to RAM, it looks like, shockingly, that the QC710 will only have 4 gigabytes of RAM, whereas the Pi 4, of course, can come up to 8 gigabytes of RAM. Now, 4 gigabytes is a bit low, I think. I think that is going to be a little sad. I mean, 8 gigabytes would have been okay. I mean, the new Macs, M1-based Macs, have got 8 gigabytes of RAM, some of them, and that seems to be okay. I've only got 8 gigabytes in my MacBook Air with the M1. I don't have any problem with that. However, when you're running 4 gigs, half that amount, and let's say I'm a developer, I want to run Visual Studio, I've probably got my app running, I've probably got some web pages open, Stack Overflow telling me how to fix my errors. You know, I've got a few things running there. Some of them are big programs like Visual Studio, and now you're telling me I've only got 4 gigabytes of RAM. That is, unfortunately, a little dubious. And if you look at the price difference between the 4 gigabyte version of the Raspberry Pi 4 and the 8 gigabyte version, you're not talking about much of a difference in terms of final prices. I think, what is it, $20-$25 more? So why they've gone for 4 gigabytes just for the sake of $25 is a bit strange. So definitely a win there for the Raspberry Pi 4. Now, when it comes to the storage, this is kind of like, well, which is better? Now, you've got 64 gigabytes of eMMC memory in the QC710. So that's good in the sense that we would hope that eMMC is faster than micro SD. Not so good in that it's only 64 gigabytes, but it's usable. It's going to be tight. If you start installing Visual Studio and things, you might have to add an external hard drive to start storing things on. But of course, the speed would be an advantage. But with micro SD, of course, you can put in whatever size you want. You can put 128 gigs. You can put in much more if you need to. So I'm going to call that a tie because I think the speed is important, but also the capacity is important. So, you know, let's just call it a tie. Hopefully, the speed in the QC710 will really be a significant factor in making it boot up and run quicker than, let's say, the Raspberry Pi 4 runs Windows. Then moving over to Ethernet, this is absolutely just unbelievable. You've got 10/100 megabit a second Ethernet. Now, okay, that's probably going to be usable if you're in your home LAN, in your office, copying files back and forth, accessing the internet, accessing GitHub or whatever. It's going to be fine. But a Raspberry Pi 4 has got gigabit Ethernet. I mean, this is a $35 board at the lowest configuration with 2 gigabytes of RAM, and it's got gigabit Ethernet. And this thing is meant to be a dev box from Microsoft and Qualcomm, and you haven't got gigabit Ethernet. I mean, this isn't 1999, you know? I mean, this is not really a good thing. It's going to be usable. It's going to be okay. You know, you probably haven't got a 100 megabit connection to the internet, so you're okay from that side. But if you're copying files around inside your own LAN, if you want to use network attached storage for keeping all your files on because you don't have enough space because of that 64 gigabytes, then, you know, having a high speed Ethernet would actually be pretty useful. So definitely another win there for the Raspberry Pi 4. But where it lacks gigabit Ethernet, you do have 4G at least, because of course these Snapdragon PCs, the idea is that they're the always on, always connected PCs. So you get the 4G, and thankfully they're including 4G inside of the development box, which means you are able to, you know, experience what it means to have that extra connectivity. You'll be able to test out the ability to swap between the networks, you know, just all the stuff you might need, but to know that the destination for your program that you're developing is going to be in a device that can always be connected because it's got 4G. So a win there for the Snapdragon. But then just when you thought things were looking good because of connectivity, they go and throw another spanner in the works. It doesn't have Wi-Fi by default. So the Raspberry Pi, you've got gigabit Ethernet and you've got Wi-Fi 5. Now with the Snapdragon box, they're saying, well, you've got Ethernet and you've got 4G. You don't need Wi-Fi. And if you want Wi-Fi, you can pay extra for it and put an extra module in and then it will work. So it's an optional extra that you pay extra for. And again, I'm like thinking this thing got to be dirt cheap, because if they're cutting corners like the amount of RAM, the amount of storage, whether you include Wi-Fi, they've got to be really aiming for a low price, or I really hope they are. That's the whole point of what we're talking about. So another win there for the Raspberry Pi 4. Now, we know the Raspberry Pi 4 has Bluetooth. There was no mention that I could find yet on whether this thing has got Bluetooth. Since the Snapdragon, of course, supports Bluetooth, let's just hope it has. So let's just say they've both got Bluetooth 5. Now, when it comes to the USB ports, you've got four ports on the Raspberry Pi 4, two USB 3, two USB 2. On the QC710, it looks like we get one USB 2 port and one USB 3.2 Gen 1 port. So obviously having that fast 3.2 port there, Gen 1, is good if you want to add in an external hard drive, external SSD maybe, give you some extra storage. Running it through that port will be good and actually would boost your productivity significantly. But only having two ports is a bit of a nightmare, because by the time I plug in a mouse and a keyboard, then that's it. I've already used up all my ports. Okay, so, you know, two USB 2 ports and then one faster port would have been okay. But just to, so now it means I have to have a hub, or I have to use a Bluetooth mouse or a Bluetooth keyboard. Already starting, things are getting complicated. On the Raspberry Pi, you've got four ports because they know you want to connect lots of different things into it. So one extra USB 2 port wouldn't have killed them. And then it would have been easy for me just to connect in a keyboard and a mouse, plug in the monitor, and off I go. So again, cutting corners. It's got to be dirt cheap for all these little corners they're cutting. And when it comes to powering the device, it looks like it's USB-C, which is what the Raspberry Pi 4 does. So you basically take a USB-C power supply, even one with power delivery, you can connect it up and it's kind of universal. So that's good. It's a universal power supply. Now, you don't get a power supply with the Raspberry Pi 4. I'm guessing, again, if they're trying to cut the corners, they're not going to give you a power supply with this thing. You have to supply your own, and you use that to power the device. That's okay. I'm okay with that. But at least it's standard. It's not some kind of Qualcomm-only power supply they've got, and you have to buy it from them. If it's USB-C, that's absolutely fine, and that should be a safe and easy way to power up that device. And finally, we get to the HDMI ports. You get one HDMI port on the QC710. You've got two micro HDMI ports on the Raspberry Pi 4, which can power two 4K monitors. I'm hoping at least the HDMI port can power a 4K monitor on the QC710. Two ports, well, okay, if it hasn't got two ports, that's not a problem. For serious development, obviously, I use three monitors on my setup. I just glanced over there because the setup's over there. On my setup, I use three monitors. So two would have been nice. I'm not going to use this as my main PC. So if it's just one, so at least I can, you know, put a nice monitor on it and do some coding and actually debugging and testing. That will be fine. Not too upset about that. But if the Raspberry Pi can provide two, it obviously isn't that difficult. So again, a win for the Raspberry Pi. So clearly, when we look at these specs, this is not a bleeding edge device. This is not an Apple M1 Mac kind of competitor, and it shouldn't be. It absolutely shouldn't be, because what we need is something that's accessible for everybody to get into, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. So the price of this, because of the specs, needs to be dirt cheap. You see, minimum amount of RAM, minimum amount of storage, fewer USB ports, we've not got dual monitor support, all these things, no Wi-Fi unless you buy an optional module. You know, they're not going to give you a power supply probably. So this really has to be dirt cheap, because they've cut so many corners. If they price this at like $499 or like that, it's going to be just laughable, absolutely laughable, because you can't provide that, all cut out all those things and then charge a higher price for it. So why this needs to be dirt cheap, first of all, is because of the specs, because it's not worth having a high price attached to this. Now, as a final thing, talking about specs, we've talked about the Raspberry Pi 4. You can get a 4GB one for $55. Now, I was looking around on the internet, and you can get in the UK, you can get a Poco X3, which has got the Snapdragon 732, which is basically what the Snapdragon is in the 7C. In fact, this might be even a bit more powerful, but it doesn't matter. But the point is you can get one of those for about £199, and I think on Amazon.com I saw one for about $240. So you can get a full Android smartphone. That means with a display, touchscreen display, cameras, you know, battery, all that stuff built all in a nice compact little unit. You can get that for $240, let's say. And at the other extreme, you've got a Raspberry Pi 4 with 4GB for $55. So this thing better be priced somewhere between $55 and $249, because it would be ridiculous. You can actually buy a smartphone with a display and cameras and a battery and all the other stuff for cheaper than you can get just a little plastic box with a motherboard in it and some ports sticking out the back. So this thing, really, if it was $99, that would be great. $149 would be nice. $199 would be, okay, more than that. And it's like they're just laughing because this is just not, that's not right at all. Now, the second point about why this must be priced as low as I'm saying is because Microsoft and Qualcomm should not be making any money from this device. This is a zero profit device. Now, Qualcomm build a little prototype smartphones that they give to their partners that they share with the smartphone makers. So they've got kind of a reference design. They do that all the time. So they've got people that build kind of little boxes, and they must have done the same thing when they were partnering with Microsoft and others for the laptops and Chromebooks. They must have done this. So this isn't like they've put together a new team and they've got all this R&D to actually, these motherboards probably came out as a byproduct of what they've already been doing. Some engineers spent some time to put it together, but it wasn't a whole new stuff. So there's no, they shouldn't be looking to sell these and then say, and we're going to make 33% markup on these things. No, no, this should be zero markup, because the reason they're making it is they want people to buy them so they can start developing for Windows on Snapdragon. Now, back in the day, I used to work for Digital Equipment Corporation. That's VAXes and the Alpha servers with the Alpha chip. And back in those days, DEC sold hardware. And our kind of philosophy was you can't sell hardware without software. So we worked on software. I worked on software. I worked on email servers and directory servers. And that was what I was doing. And you can't sell the hardware if there's nothing to run on it. With Windows on Snapdragon, it seems to be the other way around. They've got the software. Windows on Snapdragon works. You can even download it and put it on your Raspberry Pi. You can put it on your, you can emulate it on your M1 Mac with a virtual machine. I've got a video about that here on this channel. The software's there. And people are starting to port the software over to ARM native. There's no hardware. The hardware is not there. So you can't sell the software now without the hardware. So this hardware should be for zero profit. Okay, costs, cover the costs, absolutely. Cover the manufacturing costs, absolutely. Cover even a little bit the R&D, but it should not be for profit because you can't sell Windows on Snapdragon. You can't get that whole ecosystem going if you're trying to make money at the bottom end with the development kit. No, it's got to be zero profit. And the third point about why this should be dirt cheap, as I hinted at earlier, is accessibility. This should be something that every single developer, whether they've just got a little hobby project they've got that just brings up one window and does something and you click on it, you say, oh, that saved me a load of time, you know, a little clipboard utility or something, all the way up to people that write sophisticated professional software. This should be accessible to everybody, because without accessibility you won't get momentum. A momentum is the key. You need to be able to get people on board. You need to lower the barrier to getting on board and get people on board so that they can then just go and develop that ecosystem. Because when the ecosystem thrives, when people talk about, oh, is that available for Windows on Snapdragon? Oh, no. Oh, that's a bit disappointing. Oh, because everything else is. Why isn't your one? That's the point. That's the fundamental point you need to be at, where it becomes obvious that you should be supporting this platform. At the moment, it's like, well, should I support the platform? What is it worth the effort? No one else is supporting it. Why should I support it? I've got to buy a $1,000 laptop to be able to support this. I've got to spend all this money. Oh, look, there's a $99 little box. I can actually start developing. And then it grows. It just absolutely grows. So I hope Microsoft and Qualcomm understand the mindset here. The reason why Intel succeeded so much, both at home and in the server market, was because it was accessible. Because there were clones. There were clones of the original IBM PS2s and the IBM XTs and ATs, and that sparked a whole market because the clones were always cheaper. And you, as I said earlier, you could literally nowadays, you can walk into any electronic store, you can buy a fridge, and next to that you can buy a PC and you can put them in the boot of your car and you can just go home. You can't do that today with a Windows on Snapdragon. I need to be able to do that so that it's accessible to everybody. Once it's accessible to everybody, then the ecosystem will launch. Okay, so there we are. Three reasons why this QC710 Snapdragon development box better be dirt cheap. And I've even quoted prices as low as $99, $149, $199. I'm starting to go, Okay, if they go beyond that, if they start to go into $300, $400, $500, then just forget it. It's going to be a complete and utter failure. It's going to be a dismal failure in every possible respect. Okay, that's it. My name's Gary Sims. This is Gary Explains. I really hope you enjoyed this video. Probably a bit of a rant, sorry about that. But I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please do give it a thumbs up. If you enjoy these kind of videos and all the other kind of videos that I do, best thing is to subscribe to the channel, hit that bell notification icon, and then you'll know every time I drop a new video. Okay, that's it. I'll see you in the next one.